Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Yeah. Between living and dying.
Welcome back into another exciting edition of 11 Personnel. Nick Roush, a lot richer this week, hanging out with Adam Luckett. Luckett, it feels good to be a rich, rich person.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're going to retire and buy your own horse to run in the Derby.
I'm Daffy Duck, just counting my dollars up. And then is it Scrooge McDuck who dives into the coin?
The Daffy Duck.
Yeah, where he's counting his money walking. And then Scrooge McDuck dives into the coins, which would certainly
DuckTales.
Yeah, you're breaking your neck if that's happening. But I didn't break my neck. And you probably had to ignore my advice to win big because I was big on just like, oh, tis the law is going to win. Might as well write it down. But I did hit it real big on Friday with the pick five at the Oaks. And that was exciting. I've never hit a pick five before. And I went with a freaking 15-1 Brad Cox in the Oaks. Look at F South End, guys. You just blindly bet Brad Cox, and about 50% of the time you're good. That's how it kind of factored in over Friday, Saturday. He paid us well. And look at the thing was, I thought I hit it big, and then my buddy went and hit a pick five on Saturday for $29,000.
$29,000. Wow. That Uncle Sam is going to be giving him a ring.
Oh. Au contraire, mon frère, the IRS changed the tax laws to where the odds have to be 301 or greater for you to actually have to pay taxes.
Wow.
Yeah. So, wow. So really, I mean, hell, you would have to hit.
He's
like
hitting that tax bracket just right.
You would have to hit a very dumb. I think his were like 240-1 were the odds on his bet, on his ticket. But it would have to be a monster parlay now for you, if you were just going to sports gamble it, to be able to be forced to pay taxes.
I want to say that's, you're looking at, like 12 team or 15 team payoff.
Yeah.
To get like, up that high.
It would have to be enormous. Hell, you only had 9 college football games to even bet on this weekend. So like you could have just rolled them all, and got out with it. I don't know if anybody could have done that and predicted the, was it Alabama State or South Alabama that beat Southern Miss?
South Alabama,
I don't know how many people were predicting FCS outright, straight-up victory over Southern Miss in that one.
That was a big one, and it gave us our first coaching firing of the offseason. I don't know about you, Nick. I know there's a pandemic going on, and I know a lot of teams it's going to be expect to have your coach back no matter what. But I think it's also too important to remember that this is college football. Like, there's going to be some firings.
Yeah, and I love the way they phrase it was, he's stepping down. That's exactly the phrasing they used for Mark Hudspeth.
That's just the new spin, how they're kind of – that's the PR that, like, I guess when they go to the PR seminars, instead of firing, they say, we should put it this way. It just frames – better for everyone involved.
But
I think I've seen that from the NBA. I think when the Nets fired their coach, it was a mutual agreement
parting.
To part ways. Yeah. Whatever word salad they're using.
But Jay Hobson opened the 14 or no, was that it was the 15 season.
Mm-hmm.
No, 16.
No, 16. Yeah. 16.
16 season.
Yeah.
By beating Kentucky. That was his first game as head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then the previous year, Mark Hudspeth opened the season against Kentucky. Both coaches had quote unquote stepped down over the last 3 months. And Hudspeth, I believe, was at Austin Peay, and he was actually doing a bang up job. And like that was weird. Like it's almost like he did something that was like basically saying COVID was fake or something. Like that's kind of what I made it sound like. He wasn't taking coronavirus serious, so they just axed him.
Yeah. He was fired at Louisiana not long ago, and then that happened at Austin Peay. Did you see some of the names that popped up for the Southern Miss job?
Ooh, let's hear some names. I heard Rich Rod. That was the big one.
Saw Rich Rod.
Mm-hmm.
A guy by the name of Hugh Freeze graduated from Southern Miss. His wife graduated from Southern Miss.
Oh, man. Oh, my God.
If you know anything about Southern Miss, like, they're all about winning. Like, they want to win. That's the order of business. So, that's going to be one to keep to definitely keep an eye on, I think.
God, can you imagine now, the state I don't of Mississippi know if,
yeah.
with Hugh Freeze?
The thing with Southern Miss, yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Lane Kiffin and now I can't even think of the Pirates name, Mike Leach. Like, that meeting at the Capitol this year would have just been exponentially right. crazier if you had Hugh Freeze in the mix. Mm-hmm.
The thing about Southern Miss is it wasn't long ago where Louisville was trying to get on Southern Miss's level in CSA. Like, you go back two decades, like, they were kind of the cream of crop in that conference, and realignment has just screwed them over in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You see Louisville and Cincinnati, they all got out. And then in the most recent batch,
TCU.
TCU. But then even the same on a smaller scale, like Houston and schools like that, they got to move up to the AAC, SMU, those type of schools, while Southern Miss had to, you know, they were kind of stuck because they're kind of weird because they have a nice tradition, but they don't have a lot of money.
Right.
So it's going to be an interesting job. I mean, for Hugh Freeze to be there, or I mean, that would be fun. I don't know if they would touch him at all, but he's going to have, I think, a lot of important people probably pushing for him due to his ties there.
I also saw Feldman, like, hashtag a Louisville assistant. I'm assuming he's talking about Dwayne Ledford. I didn't read the article, but of course.
No, it was Brian Brown, defensive coordinator.
Of course, Feldman's going to throw his boys at Louisville a bone and say that, like, this guy's good enough to be get a head coaching job.
Yeah. Brian Brown, who played at Ole Miss, he threw him in there.
Good for you. Good for you, Brian Brown, that played at Ole Miss. But on the week one games, you made people richer last week. We got our first lock of the week, and holy crap, did we lock it up. That game was over before it even started. My goodness, BYU, the Mormons could not be stopped.
That feel of, like, a high school game, first-round playoff, like, the big schools playing, like, this small-time school who probably snuck into the playoffs at 3-7, and it's just like, we want this right now. And the other team is excited, like, pumped up to be out there. And you could tell – that was one of the cool things, I think, with no fans, is, like, you got to hear, like, reactions from the players after every snap. And you could hear the sideline players chanting and whatnot. But you're right. Get back to your point. It was a total beatdown. And it turns out that practicing tackling and hitting is kind of important.
Not only that, but, like, they haven't done that, and they're a triple option team with a new quarterback.
You would think of the team you would think they would be all in on it, because you can't really go out and just practice the option. It's not like you're throwing the ball and you can just spread out playing space. You have to play through contact.
And the timing of it all on your pitches, like, that was a disaster waiting to happen. And I thought it was hilarious that BYU opened as a dog. And they ended up, I think, getting all the way up to 3-point favorites. It didn't matter because they really had their way with them. And the point that you brought up where you could hear from the sidelines, even though it was a blowout, I think there are some things that we can learn from this game. And one of them is that just being vocal on the side, like, the sidelines can play a significant role, whether it's – I mean, run-pass calls are at the very basics, will be much more noticeable. But I do think the just, like, overall juice that you won't be able to get from the stands, you can get that from the sideline and just from guys who are a little bit louder. Now, we don't have Jordan Jones on this team or, you know, Denzel Ware throwing trash cans at people. But there's I think that will play a significant part, is having some guys who are getting everybody else fired up.
The strength coaches are going to play a big role in all this, I think, because they're usually the guys getting everybody all juiced up.
The dude from Northwestern.
That's what I was just thinking. Or even, like, Minnesota, like, P.J. Fleck was made for this.
Oh, yeah.
Just get his guys pumped up and ready to go every week. Like, you know, they're bringing some juice. And now think of like Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech, where they have like the money down thing, and he's got all these different types of sayings. And I think they're the team that like they sprint to the other end at the end of the third quarter and do all that kind of crazy stuff. So coaches like that who can get their guys, I don't know, just to have like some of that excitement to pick up the team, maybe if they're down a little bit, or in a case last night, you catch a team that really wasn't prepared to play, you can really have a chance to jump.
Man, I hope those boom mics pick up Mark Stoops screaming at the officials. Man,
oh yeah, yeah.
Like, and you know, Stoops, he's not he's an intense guy, but he's not a real big rah rah guy. Like he can't like fake it at all. He is who he is. So I think once you see like something happen, as long as he toes that line, that's how you rally the troops. Like, you get one bad call, Stoops is just early on in his career, he kind of lost it. That Mississippi State game where they onside kicked it and they caught offside.
Auburn at home.
Oh man, there was a couple where it's just like he let the train get off the tracks. I think he's figured out that line, but that's going to play a big role this year. You mark my words. That will. And here's the thing too, Luckett, is that most of the guys on this team are relatively quiet guys, like all your kind of leadership guys. You know, Square, Drake. He's a no nonsense kind of guy. Terry's a little bit on the more vocal side, but like Josh Ali, Yusuf Corker, those guys are naturally introverts, and that's kind of been a theme, is making those guys more vocal. I think it's slowly happening, and it's been a process, but there isn't your typical, like I said, Jordan Jones is in that locker room just ready to get their mouths rolling, you know?
Which could be a good thing. Like, it's maybe not as hard to get a team ready if you just got straight up serious dudes. You're just about their business. Like, they're going to come, you know, lunch pail type attitude every day, whether as big talkers or whatnot, maybe more of a roller coaster from a day-to-day basis. Maybe that's a good thing in this type of season.
It's also good to just have, you know, most of your team back. You're not dealing with replacing a bunch of guys. BYU had 15 guys returning, just like Kentucky's got 15 guys returning, and all five of their offensive linemen. And that offensive line, look, we could have moonwalked through some of those holes. My goodness.
Yeah, they were having a good old time out there.
It'd be kind of nice to be like a 28-year-old offensive lineman in college football too. It's a benefit of the Mormon mission. You get a couple
BYU
of years.
BYU does have a very unique advantage in that way. Like, BYU for COVID, like, I don't think it's maybe that hard to get those guys to maybe want to just hang out at the football facility or just kick it with everybody, because they do have that honor code, so they can't really – there's not much they can do out there in Provo. Yeah. So usually they have pretty, you know, a discipline-type team. And always BYU, since I've been watching them, they're always – they're kind of like the Mississippi State of the West, the old school Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Where you just play them and, like, you know, you better
they're
be
a meat
ready.
Grinder.
Well, you're going to leave that game with a limp or a bruise, or it's going to be hard to get out of bed on Sunday morning. Like, you better be ready, you know, be in a boxing ring for 15 rounds when you play them. Now, whether you win or lose, they're going to try to fight you, pretty much.
Speaking
of COVID,
they
brought the fight to Navy, and Navy wasn't ready for it.
No, they weren't ready at all. So now BYU – it has to be America's Navy. Those are the rules. You beat Navy, you become the defenders of our oceans. So congrats to the Storm and Mormons of BYU. You brought up COVID, and I think this is a good transition point to talk about, A, the just crazy kind of outbreaks at some places, but B, we now know at least the threshold in the Big 12 where – if you have too many players out for COVID, this is the number that puts you on the sideline.
NFL and, rules, 50th roster.
Yes, and there were some like limitations on players, and I believe it was the minimum was five offensive linemen, four defensive linemen, and one quarterback.
With seven offensive linemen, four D linemen.
Seven. Okay. And you could, if you had fewer than that, you could have the option of playing if you felt comfortable playing. So, like Kentucky last year, they would be like, well, we don't have a quarterback. We have a Lynn Bowden, but we've got to play anyway. So, you can still play. But if not, they'll rule it a no contest until it's rescheduled. So those are kind of the minimums. And look at some of these SEC schools, I don't know if they would have hit those bars because the Tennessee had was 22 or 44. It was an astronomical number.
44. Now it was over half the offense. I think they have 64 total players on offense, and 33 were out. 30 could practice Saturday.
Wow.
Now, of those 33, there was like five or six guys who were out for injury. Mm-hmm. But reading David Ubbin's article, who's on the beat for Tennessee at The Athletic, it made it sound like there was some type of get-together where the offense came in contact with someone who had COVID. So most of them – are out for that contact tracing.
Yes.
Which is short term. I think it's like a week or so. Right. So you wouldn't be in that for long now, but there was, I think I read 7 or 8 people who contracted the virus,
mm-hmm.
Who are on that 2 week period. But that's something you're definitely going to have to battle. You had Ole Miss, had some guys out, and then Missouri, drink with today, I think I could have 14 guys out. So it's definitely something that's still here and something that teams are dealing with. And that's just teams that are announcing it. I'm sure there's others where we're just not hearing about it.
Well, and the other one I heard was Ole Miss only had 4 offensive linemen for a few days at practice because a bunch of guys in their room either got it or had to be a part of contact tracing. I will say, though, it's going to make me think – whenever a coach says he was banged up. So, like, this weekend, it was Kenneth Horsey who was absent. Now, I'm not saying he has COVID, but whenever they're absent and it's just banged up.
Your mind's going to go to that, for sure.
Yeah, it immediately does. So, that's something to keep in mind. Because I know there were whispers that a few players actually had to go through COVID kind of protocol on Kentucky's football team that hasn't been addressed. So, you know, I guess it's kind of a, we'll wait and see, because Mark Stoops, he talked a lot about it, but a variety of different things after this scrimmage, but he didn't kind of get into any specifics with injuries or COVID related stuff, because I think like most football coaches, they're just trying to stay on football as much as possible and just get to this first game.
Speaking of injuries, how bad is Isaiah Epps' foot? Like, was this – like, how serious was that injury? Because I think we heard from him. I think he made some comment about him this past weekend. Said he's really not 100% yet. And then –
I've reached the point where don't know if we're ever going to hear from that guy again.
Yeah, it's getting there.
I'll be
it's
almost more
a year now. It probably is a year because it happened in camp last year, I think.
Yeah, it happened in camp. So it's been at least a year. We thought he was going to be back for the Florida game, which would be like this upcoming Friday, because that was the timetable for the initial injury. I think what happened like it is I think he broke it and then re-aggravated it when he was.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming it's been a vicious cycle, but I'm kind of pigeonhole. Like I'm not even considering a part of this wide receivers race because essentially what Eddie Graham said today was that like they're confident in Josh Ali and Alan Daly. I get the feeling that those two guys, those are your kind of locks. But then the rest of them, it's kind of a toss-up, and they don't know who to prioritize where between Cleveland Thomas. Bryce Oliver was the early flavor of the week in camp, and lately it's been DeMarcus Harris who's quote-unquote made a move. And I think this is the kind of final big storyline in camp is between the left guard position, at least as far as the offense is concerned, the left guard position, and who are those other guys going to be in the wide receivers room?
Which is what we've wondered all along. Those have been those were the two biggest questions. And we're really not going to know anything. I do think what we're hearing about Dotson is a very, very promising sign. You've had the head coach and the offensive coordinator speak glowingly about in the last few media sessions. And then you start looking at that O-line. You know, I think they seem to be pretty confident in Horsey. Quentin Wilson is the guy they talk very frequently, it seems like. And Nasir Watkins is their swing tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So you feel pretty good about where you are there. The only thing I'm keeping close notice on is they keep talking about Kennard and playing him at guard.
Yeah, they have talked.
So is this like a draft thing where they get him snaps at guard so NFL can see him at guard? Or is it a thing where if Luke Fortner went down, that they would put him at guard and then put Watkins in a tackle because they trust him more over if it would either be Dotson or Horsey? That's something.
I think the scenario you played out makes some sense for getting Kennard reps at guard is that they just want Horsey and Dotson to focus on the left side. They don't want any, you know, they don't want to get them all twisted with any sort of flip-flopping or anything. So they're probably doing a thing where it's like, all right, Kennard would just kick down guard, and meanwhile we'll work at R.J. Adams and trying to be one, and, or maybe mixing in Quentin Wilson. But I have a hunch that Kennard just mowing over dudes, pulling down the line, they probably feel pretty good about the way that would look. So,
yeah, but I think they're getting the point where – seems like they got eight right now they feel good about.
Yeah, which is good.
That's great. That's really what you get any more than that, it's gravy. You get a solid eight, you're pretty good shape.
And you know what? I know it would bring a lot of people joy if there's a big old dude from Belfry who's mowing people down on the big blue wall. Like that scratches the itch for a lot of folks. So hopefully we see it happen for Austin Dotson this fall.
Another slow cooker in that OL room. I've seen that happen multiple times now with Schlarman. Guys get around their fourth year, and then they suddenly become a player and turn into a really good player. We saw it with Luke Fortner last year, and maybe Dotson's a guy that can surprise the folks this season.
Were there any surprising comments you heard from Mark Stoops over the weekend? He spoke at length after the scrimmage on a few different topics, but on that first coaches show of the year, that was Monday night, Labor Day night. You probably didn't listen, but you know, that's, he doesn't reiterate a lot of his talking points, but that's for a lot of folks, that's their form to hear from Coach Stoops. So he usually
drops a couple things in there though that are a little newsworthy.
In this case, it was Joey Gatewood pretty much saying, like, I'm going to find out he's eligible this week, or I'm going to march up to Indianapolis and start whooping some ass. That's kind of the vibe I got from him when talking about Joey Gatewood. They feel pretty confident about it. I felt like that was one of the bigger nuggets. What stood out to you, Luckett?
The Vito Tisdale-Mike Edwards comparison pretty much told me that they're working him at nickel.
That's a
good – I think he's going to get snaps at nickel this year. And so, then when you heard about Brandon Echols earlier in the week, heard about him getting some snaps at nickel. And I think that's a way of the staff maybe trying to get their best 11 so they can play Dort, Kelvin Joseph, and Echols all together. But the way it's trending, I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the season if Vito Tisdale is potentially your starting nickel. It seems like, guy, they're really, really high on.
Mike Edwards got a hold of that.
I know, I saw that.
Vito comparison. He's like, come on, man. Like, I love all of these guys who are fresh out of school, and the coaching staff starts hyping up the next guy, and they're like, really? You know, last year it was Vince saying that, like, Justin Riggs is going to be better than CJ Conrad, and CJ, you know, is like, really? Come on. Like, I've only been gone a few months, you know. But, hey, I feel like they aren't going to throw around the Mike Edwards comparison loosely. They're just not. Stoops thinks very highly of that guy. So he's not going to throw it out there all willy-nilly. They really – I mean, for as quiet as that recruitment's been, they really love what Tisdale brings to the field.
Similar kind of recruiting profiles. I think both ended up high three stars in the composite, but I think both, when you looked at them, the staff and people around the program, they were better than their recruiting ranking. And then they're both kind of guys who were like just kind of a rangy safety who has cover skills, but it can do a lot of things. You know, can come up, defend the run, can blitz. A multi-dimensional type player, and somebody that's what you want at that nickel position. So I don't think the comparison was too off, but you just look what Edwards did at UK. I mean,
yeah,
he had a special career.
Yeah, there's only been one other defensive back to make more than 300 tackles in their career.
For my money, he's probably the most underrated player in Stoops' era.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you just didn't realize
it was Josh Allen and Benny Snell. They got all the attention, but Edwards, I mean, he was the same player really since like the end of his redshirt freshman year to all the way through, and that was an all SEC level player. You know, 90 tackles, 10 pass breakups, a few tackles for loss, a couple interceptions. You can just pencil it in every mm-hmm. season. That's pretty much what he gave you.
And what this nickel position, I think they're kind of alluding to in all of this kind of talking around is, A, I don't know how much Devontae Robinson we're going to get. I just don't. I don't get that vibe at all that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So what I think where this is going, it kind of sounds like they're talking about playing a lot of just press man. If they're going to be moving – like Echols was their best cover guy last year, and they're going to put him on some slots to just lock him up. Like, I think they're just, like, taking the gloves off this year. And I think Stoops is just like, let's get after him. Let's get up in their junk. Let's blitz them. Like, that's the kind of vibe I'm getting from these coaches.
And we start looking at it like that, then you would get Corker really coming downhill and screaming to come make some plays.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've heard them talk about how they need Bohanna more to be more disruptive. And maybe they're just looking to cause more havoc this year. They're like, we got some guys we feel pretty confident with on the back end. We've got a safety who's, you know, really good when he's, you know, coming downhill, flying towards the line of scrimmage, that we can really make some offenses uncomfortable and get them in some, you know, some third and long situations. Which really, that's what they sound like. We want to get teams in obvious passing downs, because as Brad White mentioned this past week, the pass rush looks really, really good.
He said, knock on wood, but I don't want to say I'm not about it at all, but like, pretty good at rushing the passer.
JJ Weaver comment. Did you hear that in Stoops show last night?
Yeah, that basically there was two. There was one where it was like JJ kind of had his step back scrimmage, but it was expected from redshirt freshman. But also somebody asked him about the rule and they were like, yeah, he ain't staying around here for 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I like. But to this overall point though, I feel like Kentucky's defense, as you've seen it kind of ascend through the Mark Stoops era, it went from like, we're just piecemealing whatever we can. We're just doing what we got to be formidable. And then it got to, all right, we've got some playmakers. Let's put them in a position to do some stuff. But like for last year, the numbers were great, but they got the benefit of their offense and they really just had that bend don't break kind of style where they weren't overly aggressive. They didn't really put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. I think Stoops is finally going to be able to play the defense he wants, where they can put four guys down at the line of scrimmage in an even front and still find ways to make plays and take up gaps.
I think they're going to be able to bully teams this year, and that's just something they really haven't been able to do. I think with their size, their numbers, their depth, that physicality they have up front, I think they're just going to be able to bully some. And when you can do that, it makes things a heck of a lot easier for mm-hmm. for every level and for you as a play caller. If you can just – because it's different than just, all right, because in the past it was just like, all right, D-line, hold your ground. You know, try to keep, you know, offensive linemen from getting to the second level. And then we'll make plays. We'll get into third and four. And maybe if we have to, we'll design a pass. But we're really waiting for the offense to make a mistake. We're going to make them kind of earn a drive. Mm-hmm. Where now what you're pointing at is they're more like, the hell with that. We're going to force the issue. Mm-hmm. You know, we're gonna make them make a mistake. We're going to force a mistake, not wait for them to mess up. We're going to force a throw into double coverage. We're going to give them an overload blitz where a quarterback has to get on the chin or throw it away. Like, they're going to need to force the issue this year. And it may be a different style of defense you'll see this season.
And it's – we've only got two Saturdays without Kentucky football left. Like, we've almost made it to the finish line. It's,
I know, it's pretty, it's crazy.
It's pretty damn exciting. And the thing is, like, we're really cranking it up this week, locally and afar, because we've got high school football. It's back in the Bluegrass. Kroger's KSR game of the week is in Lexington to watch Frederick Douglass host North Hardin in a game that will feature two Kentucky commits versus two other Kentucky commits. And I think there's seven or eight other guys that have UK offers that'll be on the field. You got Ty Bryant and Dane Key from Frederick Douglass. There's another kid from North Hardin that escapes me right now. The one unfortunate side effect of this game, Luckett, we've never had one like this before, but due to the kind of COVID restrictions, players get to bring they have five vouchers for family members, and that's it. So it's not going to be one of those that you can really pack the stands to watch. I believe that the Prep Spin is going to be broadcasting the game, so you'll be able to at least watch it online. But it has the makings for a great game, and frankly, I can't wait to see what DeKel Kraut, like, I just want to see his speed in person. I'm going to be there covering it for KSR. And like, it's just one of those, I don't know, like, you can watch him run away from guys on film, but like, he's going to have a one of the best defensive backs in the region there. And so, like, I'm hoping I see a moment where Jordan Lovett thinks he has a good angle, but DeKel Kraut's speed just still just blows by, you know, but stuff like that in a game like this where teams are really kicking off rust for the first time after only practicing for like 2 or 3 weeks.
I would assume in this game, part of the strategy is going to be to keep the ball out of Douglas's quarterback's hands because of the two guys he's throwing into when you look at Kraut's and Dane Key. So what that tells me is that North Hardin is probably going to ride Lavelle Wright pretty hard in this game. So I think for me, looking at this, can he, you know, tote the rock sometimes and really be a workhorse type back and really keep his team in it by controlling that the tempo of the game? I think it's going to be a big deal here. And if you look at Douglas too, I think actually it's probably the receiver, that Ty Bryant. Yeah. I know he's mainly a safety. That's what they're recruiting him as, but I don't know. I think they maybe use him at running back. I might have to do a little bit more research.
Well, I get confused because they had another Bryant that played running back last year. I think it was his brother, and he went to Baylor.
Neil that went to Baylor.
Neil, yeah. Darius Neil.
Yeah.
I believe he played running back for them last year. And that's another thing too. We don't even have like any sort of scrimmage or anything to point to as like a point of reference, but either way, it should be high flying. I think what you said about Wright though, like, that dude is, he's built for a lot of carries. I know it's going to be a lot different against the physicality that Douglas has in the trenches. With Jagger Burton up front, the state's top-ranked recruit. And I'm also excited, too, like, just to see two 5A schools, a clash of the Titans in 5A, because 5A is just notoriously top heavy. Like, it's Kvyat, Owensboro, Frederick Douglass, and North Harden, and then a bunch of other guys. Is South Warren in it, maybe? Like, I know they're pretty good for a while, but like, there's not a whole lot of juggernauts. So you get a lot of those BYU Navy games where you're playing a district game and you win 60-7.
Bowling Green's 5A too.
Oh, I thought they were four.
Or did they move?
All that reclassified. Which, by the way, I believe, Coach Wallace at St. X gets to play the old team to kick off the weekend. That should be another fun game.
And St. X, they had similar – I got an email about that the other day – similar type of attendance things that you were mentioning. It's each player gets four vouchers,
mm-hmm.
and then it's very limited seating after that, maybe like 1,000 people or something like that. So a little bit more than what Douglas is doing. But
St. X would be one of the few Louisville teams in action because JCPS mm-hmm. – they're at least letting them scrimmage on Saturday. My buddy coaches at DOS that they're going to get a scrimmage in against another JCPS school. But for the rest, it's only private schools playing. Trinity will host Moeller from Cincinnati. And DeSales will play Lexington Christian on Saturday night at 6, before that Louisville game gets rolling right down the road at Cardinal Stadium. Are there any other games that really jump off the page for you this weekend, Lucky, before we move on to the college football slate?
Not really. I mean, we don't even have a lot of the state even playing this week, but, I mean, all eyes are on Douglas and North Harden for the obvious reasons.
Beachwood Corbin, from a
recruiting standpoint.
Hasn't Beachwood Corbin been a state championship game like 37 times? Back when they were single,
in my lifetime, and I'm 31 years old.
Corbin, they got a lot of kids. There's a kid for them, Dakota Patterson, I believe is his name, who 24/7 has as a top 100 kid in that sophomore class. So I know a lot of people have been paying attention to Travion Longmire because he got an offer really early from UK. But that other mm-hmm. receiver might
yeah,
be
Corbin's-
bigger. Division one prospect.
Yeah, and Longmire, his recruitment's really blowing up.
Yeah, did I see – was it Penn State or – I don't know. Somebody was getting down there in Corbin and extended a bunch of offers as of late.
It seems like a different team every week. It's been quite the recruitment.
Well, speaking of different teams, like it, this week the ACC and Big 12 open play, not every single team is playing. It's kind of the, if you wanted your non-conference game, this is the week a lot of teams are doing it. And Louisville, they're hosting 20% fan capacity at Cardinal Stadium. I know that was a real hot button issue over the weekend because we found out it was a report from Justin Rowland and Travis Graff that Kentucky will follow a similar plan where it's 20% capacity, 50% of the suites. A lot of people didn't like the 50% in the suites. Like, did your feathers get fluffed by that?
I want to hear your take on that first, Mr. Roush.
Well,
if you don't mind,
if it's 50%, like if it's every other suite, then there's like significant barriers in between. Then I kind of get it, and also like I don't. Like, I get really mad about that when Churchill Downs does stuff like that. And I think I said as much elsewhere. I don't know where, but like right now that you're in no, I don't think I can get mad at college athletic departments for trying to squeeze money out of rich people. Like I can't blame them. There's a bunch of budget shortfall. So I don't really care either way. I just know that the 20% is probably going to be a hard line that you're just not going to get over. So just deal with it if you will and take what you can get. And if Bashir is willing to give him 50% of the suites, then so be it.
My take on it is we're not that far away from Kentucky not even having a recruiting room. So, like, they've got all this money invested in the program. I don't have a problem with them throwing a bone to the rich people.
Right, right.
I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but –
yeah, like that pays for all of the shiny gadgets and gets your Justin Rogers in the building. For a second though, when you said we're not that far away from not having a recruiting room, I'm thinking, Ooh, that's a good way to get more people in. There's a lot of space. You can space these.
Well, my thing with it is just like, I don't know. I guess I'm a little numb to it because I've been a season ticket holder for forever. And like 2018, they couldn't give, you know, general tickets away.
Mm-hmm.
So my mind thinks, you know, the people, a lot of people complain about this are probably the same people who, you know, maybe aren't even going to games.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I don't know. I feel for, you know, John Smith from Frankfurt, who's been going to games for 35 years and maybe not won't get to go this year, but it's definitely different. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I just feel that I don't know. I don't think that's a terrible idea.
Yeah, and to your point, Luckett, like, I mean, it's going to stink. There's no easy way around it. Like, there was a guy I talked to that he's been to 57 straight Kentucky Derbies. He couldn't go this year. Just life sucks in coronavirus. And there's some things we got to deal with. I think what you could do to throw the quote-unquote common man a freaking bone here is just sell beer everywhere. Like, is that
– Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we can go into that.
Yeah, sure. We don't need to dive in. But, like, if you just – take away that, then I think you solve a lot of problems when it comes to folks who are angry about the way that rich people get treated versus the poors, you know, at Kroger Field. But hey,
I think my biggest issue is like they probably known about this for a while. Like, why are you waiting until?
Well, it's probably the old SEC. Let's see if we can try to squeeze more people out of Andy Beshear. But
yeah.
Those coronavirus numbers, they aren't getting any better, unfortunately. But the way that Mitch Barnhart, he didn't, you know, he kind of piddle farted around with an answer. We'll probably find out on Monday of next week, or they'll Friday news dump it that, like, hey, here's our plan. It's approved by the government.
That's probably what you were going to get, I would imagine.
A news dump right before we get college football this weekend, so everybody ends up forgetting about it anyways, because we're watching some okay ACC games. There's a few conference games in there on the slate. And Luckett, when you're looking at the board, that opening Thursday night game just stinks. It absolutely stinks. Miami's a 14-point favorite at home against UAB. And Miami, it might be the worst double-digit favorite in the history of double-digit favorites. Like, I don't – UAB was not good in their opening week game whatsoever at all, but, like, if you're betting this game, how can you bet anything other than against Miami?
That's how UAB kind of plays, though. It's just ugly. But Miami, it's just what that offense looks like. You know, for the first time ever, they're like in a real spread offense. Like with the 2020. Real quarterback. Yeah, we're going to see Miami in a real spread offense. And they've got experience returning at receivers. I like their receivers. They got depth at running back. We'll see about the O-line. But they got a quarterback who can run around and do some fun things. So, like, just – I'm just excited to see what that offense does against a defense that will be probably a top six or seven defense they'll see all season, maybe top five. Like, UAB's got a really solid defense. So, that's what I'm excited is just to see what they look like. And – Miami's playing at home. They're not, you know, they're used to playing in front of gobs of empty seats. So I don't think that's really going to come into play.
Low hanging fruit there, Luckett. Fans make fun of.
I think for both sides, I think there's a lot, you know, at play. Manny Diaz is trying to prove, you know, that was a fluke last year. You know, they're doing some good things in recruiting. We need to have a big season. Whereas UAB, Bill Clark is just won a CUSA title. He's seen as one of the up and coming G5 coaches, looking to record that big, you know, power of win. So I think there's a lot of play. I think that could be a fun game.
The other
Thursday night.
Yeah, I'll probably be that. That's a definitely a good night to have the three TV set up like it, because Mahomes is going to score like 1,000 points. The Texans, I still don't know if they'd be good. But, hey, Randall Cobb will be making his Houston debut on Thursday night. The game that I didn't know I was looking forward to this much until I did a little more digging on it is another one of those big G5 head coaching names, and that's Billy Napier at Louisiana Lafayette. He was like the people really, the college football analysts of the world, they really wanted him to hop on that coaching carousel. They won 11 games last year, lost the Sun Belt Championship to App State in consecutive seasons, first to Scott Satterfield, then to Eli Drinkwitz. But they've been right there. It was the most wins they've ever had as a program last year. And now they get to open up the season by going to Ames to play Matt Campbell, another really popular flavor of the month when it came to the coaching carousel.
Media darlings, for sure.
They love those guys. And really, Matt Campbell last year, like, he just proved, like, dude, you're overpaying Iowa State, because they lost three games by 4 points, four games by 11. And that's, like, dude, that's coaching. Like, that's – I didn't watch any of those games. I didn't watch one Iowa State game. But that's – losing all of your close games just tells me coaching matters, and you're not getting it done. People like Brock Purdy, so that'll be fun. And I think Louisiana's a fun offense. So, if nothing else, we're going to get a good game. And I can't for the life of me understand why Iowa State would be 11.5-point favorites. Like, give me the dogs.
And the announcing team on that, Tom Hart play-by-play, Big Mike Golic analyst, and then Cole Kublik analyst. So we got two linemen working in the analyst chair. That's not something you see.
We better have steak and extra breakfast Saturday morning to get ready for that game, because that's a nooner, and I believe it's on ESPN. So I'm fired up for that game. That actually – could end up being the best game of the weekend, like it.
Yeah, it's a sneaky one. It's definitely going to have my attention in that noon window for the most part. And Napier's a guy, like, for me, watching him, it's South Carolina. If South Carolina comes open, like, that seems like the guy they're going to go after. I see how I envision it, like, there could be a potential bidding war for him between, like, South Carolina and NC State. We're both there. I think they're similar type jobs. Both you can probably, if you hit it right, you can win, I think, pretty at a top 15 level at. But also, there's a big variance there. You can lose pretty easily at both, too. So, I think for him, he's going to be a guy to keep an eye on, because he's definitely going to be a guy that's probably not coaching at Louisiana next year.
No, I would say there's a very good chance that happens. So get a preview of Billy Napier before he's replacing Will Muschamp. That's a good idea, Adam Luckett. The nightcap, though, I kind of beat around the bush a little bit with it, is Western at Louisville. Louisville is a 12-point favorite. And Luckett, you love the underdogs here.
I do. Western, year two, Tyson Helton. They really kind of surprised people last year. And was really defense. Like, WKU, we've known them, really is kind of offense. Especially with Jeff Brohm. Like, they just kind of lit the world on fire there on offense. But defense, they were a top 25 defense in SP plus defensive efficiency. Like, and not a lot of people would know that. D'Angelo Malone, who's their kind of edge defensive end linebacker, is a guy who could potentially turn into a first-round draft pick. Like, he's one of the best edge players in the country going into the season. And when you look at Western, their last nine road games are 8-1 against the spread. So you're going to Louisville, a Louisville team that obviously overachieved last year. When you look at Louisville's numbers, like, they gave up a lot more yards than they gained. They gave up more points than they scored. So, like, I'm obviously – we talked about this. We're going against the current from the Satterfield.
We're fighting the war against Scott Satterfield.
Yeah, war against Scott's thoughts. So, it's kind of a contrarian play in a way, but I like this trend. I like how WKU matches up with them. They got – a ton of starters back. I think it's like 8 or 9 starters on defense, 4 of the 5 offensive linemen back. They've got a running back who's going to be first team All-CSA, got a chance to make it NFL, got a receiver coming back. They lost Lucky Jackson, their top guy, but their second guy's a guy that's going to be kind of All-CSA honors. He's was second team last year. He can play. They got a Maryland transfer, Terrell Pigram won their quarterback job. It's kind of a mid-3-star recruit. But he had, you know, he had a lot of downs at Maryland, but he also had some up too. Like, I believe he was the guy who started for him when they won at Texas a couple years ago. And then when they beat Texas, I believe Tom Herman's first or second season in the beginning of the year, the next year. So, I don't know. I like that spot for WKU. And it comes in, you know, there's no crowd.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, I like
fans
the
on the flight deck. You better believe that. If Louisville's playing football, there's going to be somebody overserved in Cardinal Stadium. The thing that I like
it. Well, you know, our the people at Card Chronicle love to point this out. It's like the UK fan at the Louisville game. You know, you just know that there's going to be one. They're going to find that person at the little game, and I cannot wait to see that.
I'm very, very excited for that. I'm also the reason why I think I like this game is because. So last year, ESPN bought essentially Bill Connelly and SP Plus rankings, and the year before, I did well in college football gambling because I would use SP Plus to figure out their spreads for games. And then see where the big discrepancies were with the real lines. When it went mainstream to ESPN, the guys out in Vegas, the wise guys, they're smart. They really started taking more into account, and you couldn't find those large discrepancies. But since this year's so weird and it's early on in the season, we're getting a lot of them. And this game is a 12-point spread, and SP Plus only has it as like a 5-point spread for Louisville.
Yep.
So I
really like that's a touchdown for WKU.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's another very funny game where there's a huge discrepancy, and that is the actual nightcap. We're getting Pac-12 after dark as close as we can without the Pac-12, and Kansas is hosting the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, who they're both two of the worst teams in their conference. Like, you know this about Kansas, but Coastal Carolina is bad. They're projected at the bottom of the Sun Belt. But last year, Coastal Carolina, they beat Kansas straight up as 7-point dogs. They won 12-7, and they're 7-point dogs again. Like, how can you not just be like, well, screw it, let's go Chanticleers?
I love that. That's what we get in that nighttime slot. Like, let's get a little loopy with the two foofy birds, the Jayhawks and the Chanticleers.
In SP Plus, it's a 7-point spread. It's a pick'em in SP Plus. I think Chanticleers are even like ranked a little bit higher than Kansas, but you get the 1 point for home field. So it's just that has all of the makings of being just the dumbest football game you'll ever watch.
I'm obviously it's going to be, you know, a little light. Like, the noon window's good. It kind of dies down at 3:30. But to end it with what could be just some wacky stuff with Kansas and Coastal Carolina kind of has me excited.
Yeah.
For college football Saturday. And you'll have obviously college game day. You'll have the typical Clemson ACC blowout.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm excited in a weird way. We just talked about like teams that bring the juice, like Jeff Collins in Florida and Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
That's a sneaky game for Mike Norvell's first.
Because
those two coaches are familiar with each other from the AAC, Temple and Memphis, obviously. And Georgia Tech's got some running backs that are pretty good. They got a true freshman who was like a top 50 recruit, Jahmyr Gibbs, who by all accounts is going to be a stud. And I just don't know. I just like your Georgia Tech, year two, you think they're going to take a pretty big jump just because familiarity over anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then Florida State, you know, it's been a weird kind of offseason there. And we've seen them lay duds before in early games. So, yeah, that's one that I think sneakily we might all be flipping that on in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, no, I'm with you because really the rest of the slate, there's a lot of blowouts in there. Notre Dame, Duke, they'll clean up the Blue Devils pretty easy.
One thing I'll throw out for all the people is do not be afraid to play these unders early. I know it can not be fun betting unders because you're cheering for punts and not touchdowns. But you look at somebody like you, there's the offense is just they've got a lot of rust where defense is more reactionary football. It's not as difficult to play defense well early as it is on offense. So, like, You look at Florida State, like a brand new system. Georgia Tech still got, you know, personnel issues on offense.
The triple total's like 50.
Yeah, the total's like 52. Like, I'll take the under. Duke and Notre Dame. Duke's got a Clemson transfer quarterback. But the last time we saw a Clemson transfer quarterback in the big level,
he was terrible.
Northwestern Hunter put Johnson together one of the worst offenses we've ever seen. Duke's got a pretty good defense. Like, they've got a couple pros on that side of the ball. If you look at them closely, they've kind of been a defense first program the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, that Rumpf guy is a All-American. Yeah. For Duke. Chris Rumpf, I believe, that, defensive tackle.
They got a corner, Mark Gilbert, who was first-team All-ICC before he tore his knee up last year. So he's another guy that can really play. So you look, that total is like 52 at Notre Dame.
54.5 on Uncle Bo right now.
So, like, if you lean on – Notre Dame's going to win that game probably pretty handily. But, you know, for them to get – like, Duke's probably – for Duke to get two touchdowns would probably be, you know, probably be right at what they do. So, you look – like, Notre Dame would have to get, you know, over 35 points to beat you there against a good defense. So, like, I just think there's a lot of value on these unders early in the season. And that's normally the way to go when you're trying to bet some of these games. I think the first 3 weeks, especially – and now it'll have more extended shelf life because everybody's got these weird starts.
Mm-hmm. No, you're exactly right. There's one game that I just wanted to say, like, wow, can you believe where we are now versus 2 years ago? And that's Syracuse, North Carolina. Dino Baby.
Oh, yeah.
Had the Orangemen rolling, and I believe they were like, I think they were like, did they host game day for Clemson?
No, but it was all, they set it up for them to do that.
They needed like to win one more game. They got
the doors blown off at Maryland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it at Maryland, and Maryland scored 800 points.
But like Syracuse, there for a while, I mean, I know Lamar Jackson jumped over him and kind of ripped their hearts out. But
Tommy DeVito, when they had him, they were fun.
But they just, I mean, man, the bottom's really falling out for him. And then North Carolina, who couldn't have been in a worse situation with Larry Fedora's dumbass, now they go and get Mac Brown, and it turns out, like, he's making out like gangbusters, and they've got this quarterback returning who many people are saying is the second-best quarterback in the ACC behind Trevor Lawrence. So North Carolina, they're 22.5-point favorite. It's their big – this is a Chris Felica stat. Biggest spread – I cannot say this. It's the largest they've been favored since 2012. That's crazy.
And then Syracuse today lost their top two running backs and a couple other players to opt out. So a lot of, like, you look, you kind of do some deeper dive on Syracuse. There's a lot of signs there that maybe they're going to have a really bad year. So if you're a believer in Carolina, I don't think it's crazy to lay the points with them in this first game because it's a big game for them. Mm-hmm. Big expectations. You're coming in. You got a lot of your team back. Year two, playing a team that, you know, that seems like they may have been cool with just not having a season this year. So,
and I wouldn't mind if Syracuse became the team that I just bet against every week. It was
– You know, there's – like, that's what I was wondering the other day. Like, there's – there's schools on here. We just got to find them early that you can just
Louisville
do the thing.
In 2018 was Old Reliable.
That's the perfect example.
And man, I remember because UK was playing, you know, FCS and nobody, and they were going, Louisville was going up against Syracuse, and we had the entire live blog cheering for Syracuse because we all just loaded up on them. And there for a while, Louisville hung tough, but, you know, of course, the dam broke and, you know, the Syracuse ended up covering that spread. But I'm hoping we can – everybody just keep an eye out and let us know who you think your team is that we're going to be able to bet against every single weekend and cash tickets. Maybe it is Louisville.
Vandy's the obvious.
Yeah, yeah. But those are Vandy's some big obvious numbers candidate. They got to cover.
The sneaky one, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Because it's starting to leak out that Colin Hill's going to beat out Ryan Helinski as a quarterback. And I've talked about their skill talent, whatnot. If they get off to a slow start, that's the sneaky one. That could be one where, you know, they got some pros on defense. They might just be, I think I'm going to back out here. That's the sneaky one, I think.
All right, Luckett. BYU was your Luckett of the week. Is it going to be Western Kentucky this week?
Yeah, on the car, that's what I like the most. Give me those, 11 and a half, 12. I really like them there. I think that's going to be 11 and a half right now. I think they're going to be in that game the entire time. Like, Louisville's going to really have to grind out a win there in the fourth quarter. So, just hopefully you don't get burned late. I think Louisville's going to win the game, but I think WKU's going to be in it all the way until the end.
Can't wait for it. It's going to be a lot of fun. 8 o'clock Saturday night. You can watch the Cards struggle against the Tops. Man, it'd be really great to have those second-best team in the state tweets ready to roll. Hell, they almost beat them last year. Or was that 2 years ago? That was 2 years
ago. 2 years ago.
Last year, they
never really had a chance. But that was like – WKU really didn't get rolling until October last year.
Yeah. I mean, and then they were machine.
Early in the season.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. All right, man. TOPS, tops. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground in this episode. We get to actually talk about football games. It's a nice change of pace, a real nice change of pace.
Yeah, I'm ready to gorge out on Saturday. College football from noon till 1 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Man.
Get the three TVs up and running.
Just don't forget to tweet out, it's at Bud Light Time, okay? The people need to know when it's Bud Light Time.
We got them ready to stocked and ready to go in the fridge downstairs.
Nice. Well, like it, this has been a lot of fun. But, you know, it's time for us to depart. So, for everybody out there, thanks around for hanging around with us today. Enjoy week 2 of college football. We'll be back next week as the Cats get closer and closer to kicking off the 2020 college football season. In the meantime, always remember, go Cats and go Kroger.